All right. Hi, everybody. My name is Rob Warsh. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, 2 days, man. That's awesome, man. Let's give him another round. 2 days. 2 days coming up, showing up at an AA meeting, smiling a little bit. Wow, it's awesome. What's today?
Founder's Day.
88, 1935. What's that? What's Founder's Day?
Bob's birthday, man.
Dr. Bob. Let's see, it was June 10th, allegedly, 1935, that Dr. Bob had, I think he took a goofball that morning, and he had a beer, and he did a surgery, and he had just gotten back from a convention in D.C., American Medical Convention. He had a few weeks, I think he had a couple weeks going into it, went there and just was hammered the whole time. And came back, and Bill was in Akron, hanging out with Ann, and they got him ready to do that surgery, and he spent the rest of the day cruising around Akron and making amends. After he got back late that night, they thought he drank again, but he was just cleaning up his wreckage, and so he didn't drink that day, and the rest is history. And we're all here tonight. We get to celebrate life over death. It's a big deal today for people like us. Big deal. So many people have tried this thing, and they're not here with us today. We're the lucky ones. So all the new people, I counted 7 of you. Keep showing up. Keep doing what we do. We just do follow the leader here. Hopefully get a sponsor. Anybody but yourself seems to work better. And your sponsor probably have a lot of bad ideas, like tell you, show up at a meeting. Why don't you get there a little early? Why don't you greet somebody? Why don't you make a little coffee? Why don't you pick up some cigarette butts? Why don't you stand out there and make sure the speaker has a place to park? Why don't you do some literature or some coffee? Whatever it is, it's a bad idea. What's that got to do with sobriety? Everything. If you got more than a couple days, alcohol's not your problem today. You know what your problem is? Sobriety. Staying sober one day at a time. Every one of us, 38-year guy tonight, congratulations, 38 years, still goes to these A&A meetings. Why? Because I get drunk on my own, but we stay sober. It's a we program. Not a weed program, it's a we program. I was on that we program before I got sober. Landed me in the nut ward again. I first want to thank all of you all that brought me up here tonight. I got some big pants to fill or shoes to fill. You're pulling great speakers from around the country, and so if this bombs, we'll blame Nate over here. I met Nate down on the beach. I mean, we have a meeting in Laguna Beach that meets. Oh, and now actually it's Mondays. Mondays, Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. 7 o'clock, we meet, rain or shine. If it's raining, we're not on the beach. We go into the bunker, we call it, this parking structure. But we meet. And we've been doing it there for over 20 years. And Nate came down with his brother Chris. Chris moved down here, and And then he called me, I don't know when it was, over maybe a year ago or so. Maybe it's 2 years, it's a long time ago. Put the date out there. Yeah, I'm lucky if I'll be alive by then. But thank you for that. Thanks for getting me up here. And one wonderful Cora's been communicating with me, giving me all kinds of party favors and treats and how to get here. Thank you so much for and hosting. It just feels great. I mean, because I'm one of those guys. I'm not a joiner type guy. I don't like people. I just want to do my thing. Just leave me alone. And I'm a loner. Pretty much, I can bet almost everybody in this room came in here thinking they're different, that they're special. I'm a different snowflake. You don't understand. It's what kills us. That's what kills us, that separation. And we all have it. I did. I thought, oh yeah, my mom, she's a drunk, and we had all this abuse growing. And we all have our stuff. But we have a solution here to that. We've learned how to apply some principles and get comfortable in our own skin. But it doesn't happen overnight. That's what the alcohol and the other stuff was for. That instantaneous, fast-acting relief. Like, boom, I want it now. And if you've been doing that for most of your life, this way of, just take one day at a time. It'll pass. Easy does it. You know, all these trite sayings, but they actually do work. So I have a sobriety date. It's November 30, 1998. I got a sponsor. His name is Mike S. Not my first sponsor. And I'm still basically doing a meeting a day. I had my first drink or my first blackout. Anybody have blackouts in the room? That's not normal behavior. But I had my first one. I held out, and I was in fourth grade. I was with Werner and Heinz and Fritz. And where's TJ at? TJ's from Waterloo. I'm from Davenport, Iowa. Another transplant. And these guys were a little bit older than me. And my parents are European, and they hung out with Europeans, and they'd get together every few, almost like you all here, monthly, whatever. They'd get together, and they'd have, in the summertime, they had these swimming pool parties. And the parents would, they'd go off, and you'd hear the old music going, and as kids, we got what we wanted, and Heinz was, so I was in fourth grade. Heinz, I think, was in fifth or sixth. Fritz was in ninth, and Werner was a freshman at the University of Iowa. You know, Werner had it going on. He had it going on. He had the girls in his room. He had the produce. He had, he was cool. Werner was cool. And so I drank. I did smoked some weed with him. And I loved it. I loved it. The fact that I always wanted to belong. I looked up to those guys. And so I chased it. Man, I chased it till I had my moment of clarity. I was chasing it. And I wasn't doing it every day in fourth grade, but I was, sixth grade was a couple times a week. Seventh grade. In junior high, we went to junior high in seventh grade. It was definitely a problem. Eighth grade, I should have been in the rooms already at eighth grade. I was already getting hammered and blacking out. And that's not normal behavior. That's not normal drinking, I found out. It was normal to me. The culture I was around, it was just, that's just what we did. And high school was a complete blur. Where's the keg parties? Every weekend, okay, somebody's house, go to somebody's place. And And I started doing other stuff. And my folks were having trouble, so there was less supervision, which is exactly what I wanted. And it was fun. It was a release. It was just I could do whatever I wanted to do. And for me, but my one thing was I didn't want to get out of Iowa. I did not like those winters. I did not like, just didn't dig it. And so I wasn't very good in school, but I was pretty good in sports. And I found that I got into a sport that I put a lot of energy and effort into. And I did it loaded, and I got pretty good at it. Good enough to go to college somewhere, get a scholarship, which was down in Florida. And so I began the geographic syndrome, where you go somewhere to get away, but you bring yourself there. So you go to a different location, but you still you. And you wonder why the same thing keeps happening over and over again. And I'm a real bright guy. I'm one of those real bright guys. It took me 21 geographics to get sober. Rob, don't touch the stove. It's hot. And we'll burn you. It won't burn me this time. Shh, get burned. I mean, just over and over and over again. And that's, we had one of the guys this morning in our meeting mentioned I think it was yesterday. He goes, we've all relapsed. Everybody's relapsed. I came into AA through the hospital program at the age of 35. And since that time, I haven't had a drink or drug. But prior to that, I tried on my own for years to stop. And we all know how to stop, but we don't know how to stay stopped on our own. At least I couldn't do it on my own. Hello. Welcome. You're on Zoom. You missed a great barbecue here. Oh, it's awesome. You might have to start doing this down in OC, huh? So I'm down in Florida, and I'm with a our coach is he's a Baptist disciplinarian, and short hair, no earrings. If you got tats covered up, he'd come and check out apartments, and if they were dirty, we had to run, and he'd kill us physically, And we drank a lot. I had normie buddies. These guys could just go off on the weekends and they're okay during the week. But I never seemed to be that guy. And I just always, I had to have something in me. And by the time I got sober at 35, I think I had a 1 3-week stretch where I had nothing. And it was about a year and a half before I got sober. I had just gotten married. Or had these kids, my stepkids came in with my wife. She had a couple from her first marriage. And I'm instant daddy and instant husband, even though we're not married yet. And I tried just stopping. And we have to stop, but stopping is not going to treat our alcoholism. If you're a heavy drinker or a problem drinker, they say, and you stop, those people, they flourish. We knew a lot of these people. They just stop and they're great. But if you're an alcoholic and you stop, and that's it, you stop, it doesn't work well. For me, it doesn't. I end up in the mental institutions. I have suicide attempts. That's what I do. That's what I have done. I am not comfortable without my medicine. Because I have a disease that is centered in my mind. And I can't just have one. My body craves more than it just opens up the floodgates, and that's why we can't pick up. Because I have the spiritual void. I have this hole in me that I tried filling up with booze, drugs, gambling, food, you name it, some material thing. But it's a spiritual void. It's a spiritual. Those are third dimensional things I'm talking about. I need fourth dimensional. I need a higher power. I need a God. I need something more than me. They say, you know, hey, get a doorknob. Yeah, great. Doorknob's great. I don't know a lot of 10-year people that have doorknobs as a higher power, but doorknob's great as long as it's not you, you know, anybody but you. My first sponsor that I had, this guy Lee, he was still drinking, living in a van, home, you know, obviously homeless, living in a van. Well, he had a mobile home and didn't have a job. And when I went through treatment, they told me to go to AA, and I met this guy in my second meeting, and I asked him to help me. And that guy, for 6 weeks, took me to meetings, had me learn the third step prayer, which my brain was mush because I'd been on 2 years of just baked, just weak, just lit up. I didn't breathe a sober breath for 2 years leading up to it, basically. And so my brain was sponge, but I learned that third step prayer with that guy. We went to two meetings a day all over the place. Lent him some money, needed some money, gave him some money. I mean, all kinds of stuff that probably shouldn't do. But that guy's direction for me, my life, was still infinitely better than what mine was. And that's the secret here. You can have some guys out of his mind, but this guy can still help you. As long as you don't run the deal. At least as long as I'm not running the show here. And that's why we suggest a sponsor. There's a great pamphlet up there, Question and Answers on Sponsorship. I would recommend you get it and read it and highlight it and ask somebody to help you. Otherwise, you got the ism. I sponsor myself, which is land you in on the rocks. I'm all over the place tonight. Sorry about that. All over the place. What do I have? 26 years I was just running the show. What are the highlights? Try to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. 1985. I met somebody here from, came down here from San Rafael tonight. Yeah, there he is. Is it Chris? Is it Patrick? So this is, I had taken a year off school. I'd done 3 years of college, and I took a year off to play tennis professionally. And I floundered because I was high the whole time and getting injured and doing what we do. So I go back to Santa Cruz, and I'm failing an English class because I'm not going to it. And that was my story. And I was just such a failure. I'm 21 years old, 22 years old at the time. I was such a failure. And my best thinking is, oh, I'm going to just kill myself now. And I drove down to Watsonville. I'm drinking tequila, smoking weed, and I'm walking to the gun shop there in Watsonville, trying to purchase a weapon. I thought you could just throw some cash and get a gun. Paperwork and wait a second. I want it now. So I say, oh, I'm going to drive to the bridge. So I drove across the Golden Gate Bridge. Get to that. There's a rest area on the other side there. Park the car. Get on the payphone. I call my roommate, Aris. And so I was living with three guys. One of them was Aris. He was there on the weekends. He was in his 30s. And Aris had a business. This was his party house. Well, we're living in Aptos. We're renting this house. And Aris, you know, he introduced me to crack. Very talented guy. So he's one of my roommates. I had Keith, who was selling weed and blow to students in Santa Cruz. He was one of my roommates, and then I had this other guy, Phil, from San Diego, who just was always in for a good time. But I called Aris up. I said, hey, Aris, my car's up here, and there's some cash underneath the mat, and the key's underneath there, so you can pick it up whenever you want. And he goes, what's that? I said, well, I'm leaving. And he goes, where are you leaving? Well, I'm going. Where are you going? I'm taking off. Where are you taking off? I said, I'm going to jump. I start bawling. And the payphone's on the wall. And so I'm looking at the wall, I'm on the payphone. And what he had done, he had his girlfriend go next door, call the cops. This is 85 before cell phones were prevalent. and she called the cops. So I'm talking to her, and my intent is I'm going, but I'm whining right now. I'm crying. You know the difference is between a newcomer and a puppy? Puppy stops whining. Dude. Okay, so I'm on the phone, and all of a sudden, turn around, and then I got this four cops that are on me. And I am so angry. My plan didn't work out. The halt. Hungry, angry, lonely. I got the angry going crazy right now. I'm angry. And I'm cuffed. And they're throwing me in the car, and I'm driving up to Patrick's place up at San Rafael, the nut ward up there, mental hospital. Not fun. Because my plan got messed up. And he's happy. Yeah, they got him. And I'm... So they put me up there, and I'm in. And luckily, this place has two... It's divided. It's got the psycho section, which is like the water polo and the wrestling guys that are going crazy over there, amped up, things are going on. Then they got the comatose section, which is the one I wanted to be in at that time. I was really down, obviously, trying to, you know. There's nothing going on over there. Everybody's just sacked out. And I was there for I don't know how many hours, and then they ambulanced me down to Santa Cruz and to the mental hospital there for a couple days. And then they released me to Aris, my crack buddy, Aris. So we go to Aris's house in San Jose, and the plan is Aris is going to drive me down to Phoenix to go see Mama, because that's where she's at now. And Aris is in the bathroom getting ready for the drive with his favorite party favorite. We're supposed to leave around 8. And I'm not in a hurry to do anything. I'm just like, just there, vegged. Just, man, what am I doing? What am I going to do? And it's 8 o'clock, it's 9 o'clock, it's 10 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock, it's noon. Finally, Aris gets comes out, and he's ready to go. So we drove down to Phoenix, and he dropped me off. He spent the night. My stepdad gave him a ticket. He flew back to San Jose. And that's the last time I ever saw Aris. I tried to look him up years later when I was making my amends run, one of my amends runs up in NorCal. Couldn't find him. But that guy was one of those Eskimos that we come across that we have. If I look back, there's a lot of people that try to help me out over the years. And that guy saved my life. And that was then, and I had another attempt 3 weeks later with the car running in the garage. That was almost 4 hours. But I'm not the swiftest guy. I should have had the hose into the window instead of just, I thought if the car's just running in the garage, that would work. But it was approaching time with Mama's coming home from a volunteer job that day. And I'm just like pissed again, But I had during that moment, I had a moment of clarity. Man, you just need to get back in shape again. I was 22, and so I started running every day. And it's that chapter 3. Health farms, change your drip, your go from scotch to whip brandy, all these different things. And once we try different things. We try different things to deal with our, at least I did, to deal with my alcoholism. And it worked for a little bit. I got. Got healthy. I got in good shape. Got some endorphins going, but still, I'm still doing what I'm always doing, which is selfish, self-centered, dishonest, fearful, inconsiderate behavior. Because that's when you boil it down, that's me. A lot of us. And so that was that. And I still had 13 more years to find a bottom. 13 more years. And during that time, I spent the summer in Europe playing tennis with a fictitious name. Robbie Roberts was my name, because I was high the whole time and I didn't want to forget my name. And the funny thing is, like, when you play in France, you go to Roland Garros, where they just have the French Open going right now, and you go in there and you tell them your stuff, and back then, and then they give you a certificate or a rating, because it's a handicap system over there. Because if you're a certain rating, you get food and housing. And that's a big deal. And I was on the bubble because I'd been there a few years early. I was on the bubble. But because I'm such a con man, which we are, I always want to cut the line. I want to make sure I'm going to do okay. It happens in school all the time. I passed the test. I'd probably do pretty good on it, but I want to do better because I'm a control freak. And so I would cheat. And so, and again, I cheated this way. And I spent that whole summer with the name of Robbie Roberts playing in France. And it's a comedy of what we do when we're doing our thing. You know, we're just doing whatever we can do to get by. Don't care about the consequences. We're just going to do what we're going to do. And so I share that with you all. I saw a few people nodding heads and all that. So we identify because that's so important. This identification that we're alcoholic. And I can't forget that. And that's what we say. There's a line in the Big Book that says, remember we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. My sponsor would say, it's patient. I add in there, it's deadly. But in that sentence, the most important word I've been told is remember. We need to remember. And that's one of the reasons why we come to these meetings all the time, because we need to remember. Because it's not that I have a bad memory, I just got a great forgetter. I'm going to forget. I'm still writing stuff down all the time. Keep notes. Because I'll forget. Like I said, I'm not the sharpest tack out there. But I've been trained through good sponsorship and good fellowship to move my feet and do a lot of things. Like I said, that sponsor had me do. You leave, and I have my wife and my kids. He goes, hey, why don't you buy something for your kids? Why don't you take your wife out to it? Hey, why don't you pick up some trash around the neighborhood? Lee didn't understand. Hey, why don't you go clean the refrigerator out? Why don't you clean that thing out and then call me? You don't get it. I need a job. I have other stuff going on. And we had us do, you know, we had me do things that totally don't make sense. But that's what the drug and the booze would do. Would shut that brain down. When all that stuff's going on, and you have a drink, it's the promises, you know. You know, intuitively know how to handle a situation which would be so baffling after a few drinks, you know. But we do this contrary action. I clean that refrigerator man thing with spick and span. And during that time, an hour went by. Called them up. I forgot what I was pissed off, angry about. Excuse me. And that's what it is. So I've learned how. That's why I still go to a meeting a day. You know, I call my sponsor every day. I have the guys I sponsor, they call me every day. So I'm doing 15 to 20 phone calls easy every day. So that takes time from this. You know. Who was I talking to at the front? It's like nothing bothers me unless I start thinking about it. You know, it doesn't bother me, but I start thinking about, hey, you know, what do you think about the president, or hey, that COVID thing, is it a conspiracy? Whatever it is, I start thinking about it. Wait a second, what does she mean by that? What does she mean by that statement? This brain, it's messed up. It's not right. It's not right. I need a power greater than myself to make me think right. Can't do it on my own. Self-will, self-propulsion. Maybe a few hours, maybe a few days, maybe a few weeks. But there'll come a time when, man, I need relief. I need something. Give me something. You know. So I ended up... I ended up having my moment of clarity in 1998. I'd been on about a 5-month run. I'd been married and separated because I was an adulterer. I had an affair, a couple of them, but one my wife found out about, just kicked me out of the house. Went on this 5-month run with this psycho girl. And, well, we attract what we are, you know? And in October of that year, my sister, okay, we were very competitive growing up, and she's probably one of us. Well, she ended up, She ended up jumping off a building, taking her life. And I went back to Phoenix for the funeral. And I mean, that's a whole story, you know. As much booze on the plane on an hour flight you can do, meet the dope man, so you're numb to deal with everybody. And there was, she's from Iowa. She hadn't spent a whole lot of time in Phoenix, but there were still a couple hundred, 200 plus people at her funeral. And I saw what it, I saw the impact of that. And up until that time, I still, in the back of my mind was, well, things would get really bad. You can always check out. You can check out. That was like an ongoing thing in my head for 13 years, you know. And so that November 28, I woke up. And I was like done. I just like woke up like stone cold sober. And the fog had lifted. And I made the phone call to my wife, in which we were practicing. We were 2 weeks away from the divorce settling. Sorry about that. There'll be another one next month. Probably better. And she said, "What are you doing?" And then I said, "Nothing." I just said, I called her basically to apologize for being such a jerk to her, which did some things that were just, I mean, I'm not going to share about them up here, but they're just horrible. And because it's not that I didn't want to be that guy, that jerk guy, but I just was. I was so uncomfortable, and I just, you know, again, inconsiderate and immature. I mean, emotionally, a maturity level, I'm a 10-year-old, 9, 8, 9, 10-year-old. They say where they started drinking, they say that's about where you are emotionally. And I mean, you figure out a way at that young age, just get loaded and you start. That's the solution to everything. Well, you're not growing much. I was still that kid. And so I went back to her place, spent the night, and saw the kids. And then the next day I had like a half a beer because I wasn't an alcoholic. I was a drug addict. I wasn't an alcoholic. And then the following day I went back to Phoenix to do kind of detox. And so I went back there and that was a nightmare because my mom, her alcohol, she was hammered every day because she just lost a daughter recently. That's not the only reason. That's just, she's an alcoholic, but it was bad. It was bad in the house there. And I was just trying to, I didn't get out of my bedroom for, took 3 days. Third day, I except to go to the restroom, the bathroom. Otherwise, I was just was hoping I wouldn't. I was just like so down. And Stace came out after my wife came, after about 5 days, she came out. She goes, "We gotta get you back to California, get you out of here." So I came back to Cali, back to Orange County. And then we set an appointment with this Dr. Kaufman, who, he started the Genesis program at the South Coast Medical in Laguna Beach Hospital. And I met with this guy, and I'm talking to him, and within a minute or two, he goes, "Oh, Rob, okay, we want to put you in this program because you're a drug addict, you're an alcoholic, and we're going to put you in there for this, you're full, you got insurance, we'll get, whoa, time out, you don't understand, I got, that's not it. I mean, even still, that I still don't know I'm an alcoholic, and I'm overreacting and negotiate an outpatient program because I'm busy, you know, I'm busy maybe teaching one lesson a day. I'm busy. I got a lot of stuff going on." And, you know, that's the thing with an alcoholic. They're so busy, doing nothing. They can't show up at a place on time. They can't do it. I mean, in our disease, we're just so busy doing nothing, you know? That's how I was. Busy doing nothing. And so I go in there and I start going to the treatment during the week. And then they told me to start going to AA, like I mentioned. And that's where I met Lee. And then I started going to these AA meetings. And I was in treatment like 3 months, I think. I was in 3 months, Monday through Friday. And should have maybe been a couple days. Because what are we doing in treatment? I'm around a bunch of sick people talking about our problems all day. Getting some juice. Maybe doing some occupational therapy, making a belt or something. We read a story in the big book at the end of the day. That was a little bit of recovery, but most of it was just whatever. started going to these AA meetings with Lee. And then I finally, you know, I got my coined out of the Genesis program. And Lee was leaving town, and so he hooked up, there was this guy, Lauren G, who was going to all these meetings. And he said, Lauren, be a good guy for you. And Lauren, like me, had been in the nut house, and he got sober at 50, and he was 6 months in the hospital there. And they put him in the rubber room for a month because he attacked the nurse. And he was, he's one of those guys, he had to wash his hands every 15 minutes, and he had 150 clocks in his house. His most stressful day was daylight savings. In the fall, when you fall back, because you can't, you got to go forward with the clocks, and he's in a second. I mean, it's a whole weekend production for this guy. But Lauren helped a lot of guys, and some of our buddies here, Chris and Jesse here, they know these guys, and Lauren, he's a great first year sponsor, great, because he'd get to a 7 a.m. meeting, he's in the parking lot at 6:10 reading the LA Times, and he's the first one there, and he had me call him every day at a certain time, and he'd go to all these meetings, I'd sit next to him, and he had some commitments. But I did a first step with him, and he kind of told me to do a fourth, but I really wasn't doing it. And I was going to these different meetings, and guys, you're getting all kinds of advice from guys. So this is how you do a fourth step, and oh yeah, you need to do this and that. And one guy had stuff as a infant, basically, a child, adolescent, adult. I mean, it's like ridiculous. We have a real simple way here that's in the book, real simple. Resentment. There's a way to do it. That I learned the ape way again. I didn't do it right in the beginning. And so it got me to the point where I was, when I was seeing these, under Kaufman, I was prescribed these antidepressants. So I was on a cocktail of that stuff. And I stopped taking it at about month 5. And I quit the tennis job. I got working for a guy in the flooring business, which I have no business doing anything construction or anything hands related at all. It's not me. You don't want me doing that. You don't want me. I worked for a guy, a painter, and all he would let me do is sand. He wouldn't give me a paintbrush. And it took me an hour just to sand the door. I mean, it was tough. Tough detoxing. It's tough. I wasn't sleeping. It took me 8 months to sleep through a night, wake up in a, another nightmare, and then I can't go to sleep, I read the big book, I write, and finally, just was rough. And then I had, when I stopped taking those meds, about a week later, I had a meltdown, and ended up back in the nut house for a week, and when I got in there, I totally overreacted. The guy next to me, this old, this guy was depressed. And I said, they said, no, you're going to stay here and give me the wristband and in there for a week. And I'm going to that Tuesday night meeting, which used to be in that hospital. I go in there, I got the wristband on now. And, I'm like 6 months dry. And I'd moved out of the house again. I'd done all this stuff that you probably shouldn't do in your first year. I tell you, don't make any major changes. You got to change everything, but don't make any major changes. So I moved out. I'm renting a room from a lady when I had the meltdown. And Lauren picked me up when I got out on a Saturday and looked me in the eye and said, Rob, you never have to be alone again. He goes, but you got to finish that fourth step. We got to do it next week. Next Friday, you got to be done. You got to be done with it. I said, okay. And I'd heard they needed help at central office up in Santa Ana. So it was a Sunday, and I called up central office at 10 a.m. when they opened up. They were open 10 to 4 back then. And this voice answers. He goes, Alcoholics Anonymous, how may I help you? And it was this guy named Glenn H. was his name. And we called him Bigfoot because he looked like Bigfoot. And I go, yeah, I hear you need some help with it. And he goes, what are you doing? I go, well, I'm going to pay fine. They're Albertsons. I'm doing nothing. He goes, get up here. I need some help. The volunteers didn't show up. So I drove up to Santa Ana. 25 minutes later, I meet Bigfoot. Hair, beard, big. And I walk in, oh, can you come over and give a big hug? And I spent 5.5 hours with him that day. And this day, back then they had 2 volunteers per shift. And on that particular day, both volunteers, they no-show, they no-call. And subsequently, the next couple years, I was volunteering on the weekends. And I had never heard of that, where both of them, and they could say, is it odd, is it God? God incidents, you know, coincidence. And Glenn broke me down. He had me laughing, and he had me crying, and he had me, you know, all these different emotions. And this man, he passed away a year ago. And he's one of the, this guy was all love, all heart, all love. And he had spoken twice. He got guys that were alcoholic, guys that had guns to their head. He had them on the phone. He had them take the bullets out 2 times. He's one of those guys, you're calling him and you think you got there's cameras in around you, because he's just like, he's just one of those guys. And he had me, he goes, you go, what meetings you go to? And you go, you got any commitments? And but not really. He goes, so I started having all these commitments with him. And so I had Lauren, I talked to and see at meetings all the time. And then Bigfoot was just having me do all kinds of stuff and calling. And, you know, you meet new guys? I go, yeah. He goes, you give me your number? No. Well, how are they going to call you, Burhead? You know, he was that guy. Always calling you on stuff. He was so great. Later on, when I was sponsoring guys, he was my filter. I'd have guys, they'd have to call Bigfoot once a week. They had me. If they didn't do it, it wasn't going to work out, because he could see BS so well. He was so good at that. And I did that 5th step with Lauren. You know, we did it in the hospital. And I think I put him to sleep. You know, we have all these secrets and these things that we think we're going to take to the grave. And the sponsors, I've heard many times, the guys are not enough. It's nothing new. It's just, we've all done it. Everybody's done stuff. But that was a big hurdle for me, because when I started going to meetings, I was going to a lot of meetings, but I always, you know, I'm different, I'm unique. And I felt part of the group now. Oh yeah, we're all a bunch of misfit toys. Yeah, we're all defective. That was a big thing, but the bigger thing was cleaning up that wreckage of 35 years of everybody that I'd worked for, I'd stolen from, either done a terrible job or literally stole from, took money. And so I started going hard on that. And one of them was a club that I was working at. And I'd stopped working there. And my wife works there, and my kids were playing over there. And I'd go pick them up, and finally, one day I go, and the owner, I go with a wad of cash, I give him this money. He goes, what's this? I go, well, this is money that I didn't turn in when I worked for you, because people would give me cash, I wouldn't give them their cut. So I gave him that, plus interest. He goes, are you sure? I go, this is your money, Mark. It's your money, take it. And I left that place, I was like skimming out of the place. And I got into a field of electronics. I was selling, doing all these temp jobs after the painter fired me. And I got hooked up with this electronics company, and they had me in the warehouse. And then a couple months into it, the sales manager says, hey, well, let's get you into sales. I go, yeah, I'm not a good salesman. He goes, no, I think you could be good. And we'll pay you more. I said, yeah, well, you know, I can't, you know. He goes, I'll train you. And he goes, I can't even get here until 8:30. What are you, a program guy? I go, yeah. He goes, I've been doing Al-Anon for 11 years. Go to your meeting, then show up. And so I was doing that for a while. And that was on, and I'm on the phone all day. Well, that's part of my thing. I was calling guys, and I would Glenn gave me this, he sent me this email. It had an A thought for a day. It had some quotes or whatever. And I started getting this thing every couple, three days I'd get this thing. And then I started, what I would do was, because I'm selling basically, and I'm still I'm an alcoholic. And so I like to fabricate a little bit.
Yeah.
And so on the hour, what I do in the morning is I type up the daily reflection, and on my word processor, I type it up, I shrink it wallet size, so I can put it in my wallet, and I stick it on my computer, and then on the hour, my alarm, 10 a.m., okay, look at that again, oh yeah, reset. And then I started getting these different things, I found this guy who had this daily ponderables, so I started reading that in the morning, and guy says, hey, what do you got? Let me see that. And will you send that to me? And started doing this little thing, this daily thing of, in the morning that we do. Or some of us have this quiet time. So I put together this daily ponderables. I started emailing it out to, I've gotten out. There's over 1,000 people that get this daily ponderables. I got a guy who puts it on Facebook. He's got 3,000+ people follow. I mean, it's just something that started that helped me at the time to, again, bring me back to the moment, because I still was so ADD and all that. So that was something I did at that job there. But I went on this retreat. How much more time? I got a few more minutes. Yeah, I went on this retreat out in Temecula, and the facilitator, he's one of us, the priest, the Catholic priest. Actually, he was a Catholic priest, he no longer is, and he was talking about intention that weekend. And in the back of my mind, I wanted to get back into doing some sports-related stuff, but I looked at it, you blew your chance, you know. And so he says, he talked about learning an instrument, and he wanted to learn a cello. He put it out there, talking to his neighbor. Neighbor said, oh, we got one in the attic there, daughter. You can borrow it. The guy started borrowing, took lessons. He became a cello student. He says, so what's your intention? And so I thought about it. I said, well, I want to get back into doing something sports related. So I put it down on paper. I shared it with 50 guys. That week, my kids were pretty good little tennis players. They started going to this place down in San Clemente, this little club, and I went to pick him up, and I meet the guy who's running it, and we're talking a little bit, and, oh, tennis there, oh, yeah, you know that, and I start talking, and what do you do? I said, well, I do this. I'd like to get into something. He goes, well, what about coaching? Tennis is a small net, people, and he goes, I need a partner, I need some help. And I saw what he was doing with this kid. He had a good little culture over there. And so we started talking like in November. And then by January, that electronics company, by the way, I was there almost 6 years. I left on good terms with them. First time ever. Left on good terms. No, never stole from them. They were very accommodating. They let me work half day. And then I went down the club and started building a business over there. And within 2 months, I got a full business, and I was able to sever that and leave on good terms. And I'm doing that job, and then guess what? I get a call from the guy I used to steal from at the club. Hey, Rob, I want help with this. And I'm going, well, I'm not that. Thanks, but no thanks. It's a little toxic group of people, but it's another story. But then I ended up getting another gig, and then the opportunity was for me to go back to, I needed a job, and I called the guy again. I said, hey, Mark, do you still have a, he goes, yeah, come on, let's get you back. So I've been working back for this outfit I used to steal from. I've been now with them 16 years. And they kind of leave me alone. I mean, I do my job. It's all AA's principles, traditions, the concepts. I've learned how to apply those things. If it's not If it doesn't involve, if it's not me, if it's not my, it's none of my business. It's my business and none of my business. Anyhow, see, it's not my business. I learned that from Alana. You know, I've been doing that for 16 years because I had some stuff going on with, mother and was deeply affected in my development from that. And I had a tough time with relationships and dealing with people and boundaries and all that fun stuff. And welcome to, Al-Anon. Thank you. I'm glad you're here. I mean, we all qualify. You may at some point want to check that out. Just saying. It's been a heck of a ride, the Founders Day story, I went out there, I always wanted to go to Founders Day. My buddy Jim Wider, he was at my very first meeting, and when he was new, he'd gone to Akron and went to Dr. Bob's house, and he said, "Oh yeah, we need to go sometime." And I was like, "Yeah, we need to go sometime. Yeah, we need to go." You know, again, AA, just like, I'm not drinking, but I'm still planning stuff, fantasy, fantasy life. So there was a guy that rolled into our group about 10 years ago, Tom M. This guy came in, and this guy was one of these guys who, our Tuesday night meeting, it's a 90-minute meeting. And it's a meeting where you can't BS your way in that meeting. You can't be funny guy in that meeting. Guys are just going to call you exactly. They're just going to call you on it. And so, and when somebody has a tragedy, we're like laughing. And the more tragic is, the more we seem to laugh. I mean, we are laughing at them. But we're laughing because we know there's a possibility on the other side, etc. So this guy Tom rolled into our Tuesday night meeting, and he thought it was a 60-minute meeting. It's a 90-minute meeting, so he just pipes up and starts sharing in the back. You can't even see him, and he's talking about this train wreck of a life he's got. And we start rolling, we start laughing, we start howling, and this kid, he's getting upset because we're laughing, and I actually left that meeting a couple minutes early. I had to go to another one that night. So the next morning at the beach, it's a Wednesday morning. This guy comes stomping down. And this guy was talking about weapons and blowing up stuff, and he's a little edgy. I'm seeing this guy coming, I go, oh no, he's coming right at me, I need a sponsor, will you sponsor me? And, oh no, yes, And this guy he's ex-military, so he's actually good with discipline. And I hammered him with stuff. Okay, this, and this, and he's doing everything, and he's doing this, and he's doing that, and he's getting well, and he's getting this, and he's getting that, and then he ends up, he had been successful in the past, and he gets a company going. Guess where the company's based out? Akron. So he's got a house in Akron now, a big house in Akron, and so. He's going to Founders Day now, and I'm hearing all this stuff about the Oxford group, the Akron AA, and all this other type of stuff. We've got a lot of New York, down where we're at, a lot of New York influenced AA. It's a little different from the Akron. They're big on the four absolutes. Bill didn't really want, he thought that was a little too much for the average alcoholic, but in Akron, it's actually in their literature. Their literature is before the New York literature, so they get away with it, but it's in their stuff, the four apps. Anyways, so this guy, Tom, he goes, "Yeah, come on, we had like five of us go to Founders Day in 2019. So we got to do the full thing, and he knows this lady, Gail, who's the archivist there, and she's giving us tours of Dr. Bob. I mean, it just was phenomenal experience. And it's going on right now. We were, a bunch of us were there last year for it as well. And 9,000-10,000 people getting together. They got a motorcycle thing to do in the morning, and you got all these bikers kind of showing up to the gravesite to do a pitch, and then it's just what we do. It's a fumble. We hang out, we do things together. It's tradition one. It's all about being unified, and you know, my that I'm married now 27 years, will be 27 years next week, you know, which is a complete miracle. My daughter, she's got 4+ years sober now. She, you know, seemed to be doing good and then hit the rails 5 years ago and was up in LA and almost on the street. And, you know, it's, man, she's involved. I don't know what she does, but I know she helps out down in Ashland. We have a women's detox housing, low bottom place that's funded that, you know, I know she goes on Sundays. She volunteers on Sundays. I know she goes to some meetings, but I don't know what she's doing. She's sober. She married a guy who's, he's got a couple years. And my other son, his wife's going to have a baby here any day now. I'm going to be a grandpa. I mean, this is a guy who shouldn't be here right now. I mean, like a lot of us, we're still here. And we're here to share this message of hope that join us. Do what we do. See what happens. You know, this morning at our meeting, we had a guy show up who's 11 years sober. He was married. He had a couple little kids. And he moved to Hawaii. Now he's in Austin. His wife got sober, got about 5 years. And then like last year or recently, she said she's not an alcoholic anymore. Now she's drinking. And then this week, she wants a divorce. And he was at our meeting this morning. He was in Austin. He was at our meeting this morning. And he shared. And then we got guys in the group who were talking about it happened to them a few years ago. And at the time, it's like everybody's, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. You know? And my buddy that this happened to, he went to Maui and he met some lady who'd been around a long time, decades, sober. She goes, congratulations. Congratulations, because that's the thing. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen. We have this on the coin. It says open, honest, open, and willing. On these medallions, a lot of them. And that's what we're open to an experience. We just gotta let go of the wheel. God's got that. So what I've learned is today, my function is just to keep moving. Keep moving, keep doing. Don't think much. Keep moving, keep doing, and see what happens. And when Nate, you know, a year and a half ago says, hey, you wanna do this? Wanna come up here and speak? Yeah. No, you know, just do it. Just do it. Just show up and do it. And see what happens. See who you can help. Because that's what it is. That's all it is today. I mean, all this other stuff, you know, the job, the success, all that stuff, it doesn't matter. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody remembers anything, you know, especially this group, you know. But it's like nobody cares. But helping somebody, you know, patting somebody on the back, being there for somebody, that's the juice today. That's what we're doing. So, I mean, again, thank you all for being here tonight, for putting up with me. I appreciate you all. And the newer people, man, I hope we're just pulling for you. We just want you to, we're pulling for you. And thanks so much. That's all I got.